From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, new regulations begin on owners of semi-automatic weapons under New York's SAFE Act. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara saying he wants to pick up where the Moreland Commission on Public Corruption left off. And the Republican candidate for governor visits the North Country. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. April 15th, besides being tax day, was the first day this week that owners of semi-automatic weapons were required to register their guns with the state police. As the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, gun owners who do want to comply say they are confused over how to register.
The head of the state's Rifle and Pistol Association, a gun owners and pro-Second Amendment rights group, says his members don't like the new requirement that they register any guns they own that are defined under the state's gun control laws as an assault weapon. Tom King says while he's not advising gun owners about whether or not they should register, he says those that want to comply are finding the new rules confusing.
Our members are just complaining that there's a ton of confusion. They don't know what to do. They're getting various responses, and frankly, the responses have been just confusing, you know, and our people just, you know, they don't know what to do.
Governor Cuomo, who touted the passage of what's known as the SAFE Act in January of 2013, is not promoting the registration date, and a spokeswoman for the state police declined to record an interview on how to comply with the new rules. But spokeswoman Darcy Wells did provide a link to a state-operated website. It allows gun owners to register online in a form that requires their driver's license number, address, and email. It also offers a detailed description of what guns are defined as assault weapons and must be registered. It's a Class A misdemeanor if the gun owner does not register, and if they're caught under the law, their firearm would be confiscated. But it's unlikely that state police will be actively checking at this point whether someone has registered their gun. Violators would likely be caught only if they're arrested or searched in connection with another crime. In advance of the registration date, SAFE Act opponents held a rally at the state capitol in early April. Governor Cuomo has not commented on the April 15th registration date for assault weapons, but he did speak generally about opposition recently. Cuomo says he understands that gun control can bring up intense feelings, and he says it's no different from other issues he supported, like a women's equality provision that includes abortion rights and a measure known as the DREAM Act, which would offer tuition assistance to undocumented immigrants.
It's a topic that drives strong emotions, like many topics. Woman's right to choose, strong emotions. DREAM Act, by the way, strong emotions. So I understand it. But it's the nature of the discussion.
It's estimated that there are as many as 1 million assault weapons owned privately in New York. State police will not be providing figures on the number of people who register their guns, though. The information can't be disclosed under a provision of the SAFE Act. Other parts of New York's gun control law mandate universal background checks on gun purchases, increased penalties for people who use illegal guns, and life in prison without parole for anyone who murders an emergency first responder. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, this week marked the rule changes in the SAFE Act for assault weapons. Well, many have to adjust the weapons or turn them in. We're hearing that many won't indeed comply in an act of civil disobedience. And, of course, this was Governor Cuomo's signature legislation.
It is. Those folks who don't comply are risking at least minor league sanctions being taken against them. To resist is not a felony in the state. It's a misdemeanor. Nevertheless, you know, you can get yourself into trouble. We do know that there are some law enforcement people who are loath to bring charges, especially in some of the upstate regions where it's an anathema, the whole gun control issue. I think that the polls in New York State show that people are wildly for gun control, particularly in New York City. But let's try to remember that Andrew Cuomo's strategy has been to maximize the vote that he will receive in this first reelection effort by doing things that upstate really likes, so that he's come up with tax programs, he's come up with holding the taxes down, he's got each of the SUNYs trying to become business creators, so that the gun control thing took a bite out of Andrew Cuomo's posterior. There's no question about it. It became symbolic of what upstaters do that are different in their minds. And many minds, not certainly all, than what people in New York City feel and think about politics and gun control. So it really was quite a hailstorm for Cuomo when he got it through. A judge has just affirmed, a state Supreme Court judge has just affirmed that his gun control program is okay, legitimate, that the idea that it was put through too quickly, it doesn't hold water, and that gun control is here to stay until somebody turns it around. For those people who aren't going to obey the law, who likes to do that? You know, you do that and you do it at your own peril and your own risk, and who knows when it's going to come and put its hand on you.
U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara has put his hand on the Moreland Commission, Alan. It's supposed to sunset, go away, but he wants and has sent even a truck to gather documents and says he's going to continue to pursue it.
Well, it's very interesting. Andrew Cuomo starts a Moreland Act Commission to look for wrongdoing and skullduggery, and he says this is one of those powers I have as a governor, and he does it. And then, inexplicably, he trades it all away for a couple of very minor league ethics reforms. We do know that Ken Lovett, the excellent Daily News reporter, broke a story early on which said that Cuomo's people were calling in the place and saying, don't subpoena this group who may have given the governor money, or don't do this or that. So the whole thing began to stink like a bunch of rotten fish. The members of the commission, of course, are very good people, some top DAs in New York and others, but they really weren't running the commission, the Moreland Act Commission. It was basically being run by some executives, and where Cuomo had tremendous influence. So what happened was that there is now a distinct feeling that Cuomo didn't collapse the commission only to get these minor league reforms from the legislature, but he didn't really want it in the first place, and he didn't really want it to work. In any case, into this riding a white horse comes Preet Bharara, the crusading U.S. attorney who is indicting state officials left and right, and who, by the way, was a major figure in Senator Charles Schumer, Chuck Schumer's office. So if there's anybody who doesn't believe that there is a specter of Schumer potentially here sanctioning Preet Bharara going after Cuomo's failure to keep up the Moreland Act Commission, I would think it would be naive. And in any case, there's certainly going to be that perception that Schumer has taken a hand in this thing. In any case, Bharara is getting tremendous, almost adulation from the newspapers and others in New York for saying, I'm going to continue the work of this Moreland Act Commission. We'll find out where they were going to go, and we'll go there. And he even says, you know, maybe we'll find out why it was discontinued. Wow. Talk about dark music playing in the background.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. Republican gubernatorial candidate Rob Astorino toured New York's North Country this week with a brief stop in Plattsburgh. He met with Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development officials, as we hear in this report from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino jumped into the race against incumbent Democrat Andrew Cuomo on March 5th. On Monday and Tuesday, the Republican challenger toured businesses in Watertown and at Fort Drum and followed the Northern Arc to Potsdam and North Bangor. He visited the local hospital in Malone, stopped by the state-run Olympic facilities in Lake Placid, and attended a meet and greet at a brewery in Glens Falls. He stopped briefly in Plattsburgh to meet with officials from the Regional Chamber of Commerce. While there, he talked about his campaign, blasting the sitting executive's economic policies and initiatives, saying New York is among the most taxed states.
We have the worst business climate out of any other state. The governor goes with gimmicks. The Startup New York ad is doing nothing to create jobs. All it is meant for is a political campaign to boost his own poll numbers. Businesses are fleeing here for Texas and Florida and the Carolinas, where they've changed the work rules, where they've attacked the extraordinary regulatory process that we've got here. New York State now is an obstacle to any business.
Astorino adds that New York is the most corrupt state in the country.
What's going on with the Democratic culture of corruption in the Assembly especially is despicable. And now it seems as if the tables are turning on the governor and they're looking into what role he may have played in the Moreland Commission directly to interfere. And that in and of itself should be looked at.
The legislature passed an on-time budget this year, and Cuomo has been visiting communities to highlight its provisions. Astorino scoffs at Cuomo touring the state touting the passage of what officials termed the Grand Slam budget in a celebration marking the fourth on-time budget in a row.
A victory lap simply because you did your job and got a budget done on time? Come on, it's what's in the budget that matters. And what we got was billions more in taxes, billions more in debt, billions more in spending.
Franklin County Republican Committee Chair Ray Scollin says there are numerous regional issues he wanted to make Astorino aware of and is optimistic about Astorino's campaign. Scollin joins Astorino's criticism of Cuomo.
In our lifetimes, I don't think we've ever seen a state governor who's been more intrusive, intolerant of dissenting opinions. He's been plagued by mismanagement from the New York SAFE Act, Common Core, and now the investigation around his recently defunct anti-corruption commission. I think New York State residents are saying enough. So a new guy like Rob Astorino coming in, Westchester County executive, I think that he can overcome name recognition pretty easily just because of the negative feelings toward our current leadership.
SUNY Plattsburgh professor of political science Tom Conda finds Astorino's rhetoric typical for any challenger facing a strong incumbent.
High taxes, the economy. In some parts of the state, not up here so much, but out in the western parts of the state, they're losing population. He's also hit some rhetoric about corruption. And they're always germane to the people, unless the economy is just booming. So whatever it is in the economy, that's going to be the dominant issue up here. He'll get a little mileage, and I think he's already tried to do it, just out of making that claim that challengers often make, that we just need a change. That's always fairly mindless. It resonates with people to some degree.
Astorino may have his work cut out for him to gather votes outside his party in the North Country. For example, the Clinton County Democratic chair declined to discuss Cuomo's rival, saying he is completely unfamiliar with the candidate.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
New York U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand visited with community leaders in Queensbury this week to hear from local officials on their economic development needs. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard.
On the campus of SUNY Adirondack, New York's junior senator met with the leaders of the business community and public officials from Warren, Washington, and northern Saratoga counties. Ed Bartholomew, president of EDC Warren County, addressed the upcoming closure of General Electric's capacitor manufacturing plant in Fort Edward.
With the loss of 200 jobs by General Electric in January of this coming year in Fort Edward, Washington County, We would ask collectively consideration be given that following remediation by General Electric, that the property be transferred to a third party so that economic development can be undertaken throughout Washington and Warren County in that area.
Bartholomew also stressed the need for support for retiring farmers and federal assistance in helping farmers develop and market specialty crops. Gillibrand sits on the Senate's Agricultural Committee. Brought up frequently during the meeting was the need for more funding for infrastructure improvements. Queensbury Town Supervisor John Slough said as communities are seeking to attract new businesses, the common problem of aging infrastructure often deters interest.
There's a lot of businesses that come to the area and to our industrial parks and say, no, we're not going to locate here because you don't have the infrastructure. So, we need some financial help to do that. This is big cost and too much cost for the local municipalities to maintain.
Peter Ost, president and CEO of the Adirondack Regional Chamber of Commerce, reiterated communities' need for more federal aid in assisting with infrastructure upgrades in order to attract new business.
Sewer and water, those types of projects need to be funded because the local taxpayer cannot bear the burdens of those projects. And so the federal government through the state government can help to support the funding of those projects.
In a changing healthcare environment under the Affordable Care Act, Mitch Amato, Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer of Glens Falls Hospital, spoke with Gillibrand about the need for federal aid to help establish new educational opportunities to train staff in skilled positions.
Any types of educational grants that we can work in collaboration with the colleges to help retrain folks in technology and in some healthcare-related job would be very good, and we would welcome the opportunity.
Well, the person you need is right here, so. Christine will do this for you. She will just take care of it. She will get it done.
Okay. You got it.
Gillibrand was referring to SUNY Adirondack President Christine Duffy. At the conclusion of the meeting, the senator thanked those who attended.
I really appreciate your time. I really appreciate the frank discussion. I'm here to serve you, so we will work together to try to accomplish all the goals that we talked about today. So thank you very much.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The future of hydrofracking in New York State, which has been on hold under a de facto moratorium for almost 7 years, may be on shakier ground than ever. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
New York's hydrofracking debate has been under national scrutiny for some time. Those who favor it say fracking will boost rural economies and help communities grow and prosper. Those against sound the alarm that the process will inflict ecological and environmental damage. The Multi-State Shale Research Collaborative brings together independent, nonpartisan research organizations in New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and West Virginia to monitor economic trends and community impacts of energy extraction in the Marcellus and Utica Shale. The group has released case studies examining the impact of shale oil and gas drilling on four active drilling communities, Greene and Tioga counties in Pennsylvania, Carroll County in Ohio, and Wetzel County in West Virginia. Judging by the data, New York may need to reassess fracking. Frank Morrow with the Fiscal Policy Institute of New York says much can be drawn from the studies.
The case studies are important because they begin the process of clearly identifying and lay the groundwork for quantifying the social and economic costs associated with shale drilling. In the report that the collaborative issued in November that focused on the employment aspects, we documented that the employment effects, both actual and potential, are much lower than had been prophesized by the industry, and we documented enough explanation of that to feel comfortable in saying that the purpose of that exaggeration is to preclude or minimize or actually avoid completely fair taxation, effective regulation, and even careful examination.
Moreau points out the case studies show that there are real and important costs, and the costs have also been minimized and glossed over by the industry.
In terms of the employment impacts, I think one of the things that was very clear in the case studies is that while the number of jobs created by the oil and gas industry itself is relatively small relative to the economy as a whole, 1%, 2%, whatever, that even with that small number of jobs, that jobs have gone substantially to out-of-state workers.
Add to the seemingly vanishing potential for new job creation a recent report that Ohio geologists found what they call a probable connection linking fracking to a sudden series of mild earthquakes this year in a region that had never experienced a tremor until recently. In March, Ohio indefinitely shut down Hillcorp Energy's fracking operation near the Pennsylvania border after five earthquakes, including one magnitude 3 tremor that awoke many Ohioans from their sleep. John Armstrong is a spokesman for Frack Action and New Yorkers Against Fracking.
The water contamination, poisoned air, ruined communities, and many, many more reasons why fracking must be banned. It's also important to know that the New York City Department of Environmental Protection, the agency in charge of New York City's water, has issued serious warnings on three separate occasions that seismic activity from fracking threatens the city's water supply. Their concerns have not been answered or addressed, and the latest earthquakes in Ohio just goes to show that the only reasonable conclusion from the science and the impacts of fracking is to ban it outright.
Further muddying the waters, Dr. Nirav Shah leaving his post as state health commissioner as of May. Shah was charged with conducting a health review on high-volume hydraulic fracturing, which has stretched on indefinitely and now may be stalled by his departure, giving state government more wiggle room before making any decision on fracking. Members of the Joint Landowners Coalition of New York expressed disappointment Shah was unable to complete his review. The Oil and Gas Association doesn't expect any decision on hydrofracking until long after the November elections. An official with the Cuomo administration insists fracking remains under evaluation. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1416. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.